Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You're confident when it comes to your work and life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same confidence when it comes to refinancing your existing mortgage or buying a home. It lets you understand all the details so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. America is obsessed with teeth. The well-heeled across the country pay thousands of dollars for that perfect Hollywood smile. Yet one in four adults have untreated dental health issues they cannot afford to fix. A third of Americans barely have access to a dentist. For some reason, we treat that as acceptable, even when it means wider disease, trouble with the basics of life, even death. This hour On Point, the story our teeth tell about wealth, poverty, beauty, and American healthcare. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Mary Otto, author of the book Teeth, the Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Mary Otto, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
It's really great to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
It's great to have you. Teeth, for some reason, you know, I'm tempted to kind of think, well, that's a trivial subject. Teeth, I mean, big deal. But then I just began to look into some of the information that you share here. And, I mean, it's just such a split screen. Americans spending more than $1 billion a year now, on teeth whitening products. And yet I'm reading here something like one in five Americans over 65 don't have a single tooth left in their head. They can't afford to have them, you know, crowns or root canals. They just get them pulled out, and they're dealing with the consequences of that. Where does this split screen come from, Mary?
Well, I found out in my reporting, I got started on this subject when I was working at the Washington Post and had to write about the death of a child from complications from untreated tooth decay. And I found out the split between dental care and the rest of our healthcare system occurred not far from where that young boy, Diamante Driver, lived. It was in Baltimore, and that was where the first dental college in the world was established in 1840. And the two self-trained dentists who established that college first approached the physicians at the University of Maryland College of Medicine and asked them if they would consider adding a dental course to their medical studies. And the physicians, as the story goes, told them that the subject of dentistry was of no interest. So these two dentists started their own dental college, and our whole separate system of dental care grew up around it. So, yes, even today, our heads are attached to our bodies, but our dental records are kept separately from our medical records. We have to sort of navigate to a separate system to get dental care. And our federal programs reflect that same dualism. You know, Medicare, as you said, covers over 50 million retired Americans, has never included routine dental benefits. So, you know, tens of millions of seniors are dentally uninsured. It's not a Medicaid, which covers over 70 million poor Americans, doesn't entitle adults to dental care, although children are entitled under the program. Fewer than half get care. Fewer than half of dentists participate in Medicaid. So there's a disjoint that affects millions of us. A third of our country faces barriers getting care.
A third of the country with barriers to getting to a dentist. If you're affluent, this problem may seem like a distant problem. But if you're not, watch out. Here's a little tape from Cincinnati's WLWT5 reporting on the case of Kyle Willis. This was a 24-year-old man who died from a tooth infection. It just sounds ridiculous. But that's the way it is for people who don't have coverage. His aunt Patty Collins was shocked when she heard what happened to her nephew.
I said, what do you mean they're calling the family? She said, Mom, the infection that he had in his tooth has gone to his brain.
And Mary Otto, author of Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America, talks about DeMonte Driver, the 12-year-old who died after complications from real dental health and just super problems. Here was Congressman Elijah Cummings talking about major strides that pediatric dental care has made in recent years.
Maybe a little of them were like me when I was growing up, when Mom and Daddy, because they had such a limited education, did not understand dental care and never took us to a dentist. They didn't understand it. And so all we had was Orajel, turpentine, a toothpick, and some cotton. And we thought that pain was supposed to be a part of our life growing up. But because of DeMonte Driver, kids don't have to go through that anymore.
Well, some kids, but many still do, and many Americans still do. I mean, Marietta, as I read you, in some substantial parts of the country and economic classes, we're still not so far from that Orajel, turpentine, a toothpick, and some cotton as dental, you know, medicine.
No, those things are still used. Many millions of people use over-the-counter remedies. I talk to people who pulled out their own teeth. They pray. I mean, that's an option for many people. It's still very, very difficult. You stand in line at these free clinics, you know, where hundreds of people sleep in their cars waiting to get care. And the only care option left for them is to have their teeth extracted. You know, you never forget the kind of pain that people describe to you in those lines.
We're going to dig into why that happens, but callers for you, Mary. Michael's calling from Wallington, New Jersey. Michael, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
This is a distinctly interesting topic to me. I'm originally from West Virginia, which is, by most accounts, the most toothless state in the country. When I was in graduate school at Marshall University, they were doing a CDC-funded study to count teeth. They had a doctor there that was literally taking dental hygienists out into the rural parts of the state and count numbers of teeth that were in heads because they didn't know how toothless it was. And I, growing up in West Virginia and living my adult years in West Virginia,
yeah,
never had dental insurance. And it's a largely very poor state, very rural state. And my understanding from looking at this more distinctly than sociologically was that there aren't that many dentists in the rural counties to serve. If you want to get your teeth looked at, even in emergency dentistry, you have to drive an hour or more to find a dentist in your nearby area. It's very hard.
The most toothless state in the country, that's a painful position to be in. Are people aware of it, Michael? Do they talk about it, or is it just accepted in your home state, West Virginia, as the way things are?
I think it's just a reality. I think, I know a lot of people that are missing teeth for different reasons. Most people don't have access to dental insurance. And even when I finally did get dental insurance as an adult, as a college graduate, the first job that had it, my wife and I were elated. And we could barely afford to go to the dentist ourselves unless it was something serious. The out-of-pocket expense was tremendous for our salary in that area. And you kind of had to pick and choose, like, how bad do we need to get this done?
Yeah.
That's going to be $300 to go get a crown. I mean, we don't have $300 to put towards a crown. You have to kind of make tough choices there. That's very, very common where I'm from.
Michael, we're going to look at that. And it's not only in areas of deep poverty that you've got people facing significant costs when they go in for dental care. But when it's bad, it can be really bad. There's a lot I want to look at there, where the dentists are and why and what they're spending their time on, how insurance is laid out in this country. But Marietta, I wish you'd just go first to consequences, because again, I think people can sort of shrug this off as big deal. We're just talking about your teeth. But when people's dental health starts to go wrong, what are the common ways that happens and what are the consequences? Not just start with their health, but beyond that, you write about jobs, social standing, very widespread consequences. Take us through the ripples, Mary.
Yeah, those are such important ripples. And Michael made some really good important points that we should try to get back to. But yes, The American Dental Association had a survey conducted a couple years ago, and it found that one-third of low-income American adults are reluctant to smile. They may be missing teeth. They may be ashamed of how their teeth look. They realize, you know, in this country where the Hollywood smile is glorified, that they are coming up short. And we tend to judge oral health and disease through a moral lens. We don't look at it like other kinds of disease that involved, you know, infection and disease tissue.
What's the moral lens? You didn't take care of yourself, so you deserve that
toothache? Yeah, you didn't. Yeah, exactly. You may not have had access to routine care for your entire life, but
you didn't floss,
still,
so suffer?
Yeah. It's not oral disease is not seen like other kinds of health conditions. It comes back to that sort of split we have in the way we look at oral health and the rest of our health. So people are held back in the job front. You know, they are locked into a cycle of poverty in many cases.
Why? Because you're missing teeth and people don't want to hire you. They don't want to put scooping ice cream or whatever.
That's right. They want someone in a customer-facing position who looks healthy and fits into our ideal of beauty. And poor oral health can, of course, hold you back socially as well. Children have a hard time studying and behaving in school when they're in pain. People have a hard time being good parents, good workers. Over 1 million people a year go to emergency rooms every year with toothaches and other kinds of what are called non-traumatic dental conditions. And these problems cost over, you know, $1 billion a year to our system. Kyle Willis was a very tragic example of that, the young Cincinnati area man you talked about earlier, who died, you know, because the patients don't get the care they need in an emergency room for a dental problem that could be treated in a dental office.
Marietta, hold the thought. The new book is Teeth, the Story of Beauty Inequality and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. Here's Owl City with Dental Care.
I've been to the dentist 1,000 times, so I know the drill. I smooth my hair, sit back in the chair, but somehow I still get the chill. Says pleasantly as he shakes my hand and practically laughs at me. Open up nice and wide, he says, peering in, and with a smirk he says, don't have a fit, this'll just pinch a bit, as he tries not to grin.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply and understand fully so you can mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the truth about our teeth, the giant disparities in American dental health and health coverage, and the ways in which that seemingly little thing drives destinies for many people. My guest is Mary Otto. She covered a lot of this for The Washington Post for a long time, out with a new book now called Teeth, the Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can join us this hour. What is up when so much of our dentistry goes to cosmetic dentistry, leaving a few sparkling while many lack the basics? And dentists, what do you say for yourselves, for our system? Why so cosmetically oriented? Why so expensive? Why so unavailable to so many? Mary, describe for us, if you would, where the dentists are in this country and where they're not. What kind of access people have? I mean, I'm reading here some places, there's one dentist for every, 100, 200, 300 people. Other places is one dentist for every many thousands. What's a map of dentists in the nation look like?
Well, dentists are healthcare providers, but most of them are also small business people, and they tend to open up their practices in more affluent metropolitan areas where they hope to, you know, get a good return on the cost of their education and, you know, their office equipment and staff. So you'll see, it's much easier to find a dentist in affluent areas. In fact, in many cases, they're competing for your business. Whereas the federal government estimates 49 million Americans live in areas that have been designated dental professional shortage areas, where there are not enough dental providers to meet the needs of the population. They're often in rural areas, but in some cases they're in poor urban areas where there aren't enough dentists or other oral health workers to meet the needs of people. And it can be very, very hard to get an appointment in a place like that. I mean, Diamante, the young man who died, his mother was looking for care for his brother when Diamante got sick and was having a very hard time finding a dentist, you know, not too far from the nation's capital, but in a poor community, you know, outside of Washington in Maryland.
We've got people writing in on all these subjects. Megan writing to us on Facebook, it's not uncommon in poor rural areas to hear about people who die because of an infected tooth that went south fast. People don't get dental care because there's no insurance for it and few dentists out in deep country. And Dot Lee writes to us. She says, I needed major dental work growing up but couldn't afford it until I was 27 years old. $15,000 later in debt, I finally got them fixed. When you're afraid to talk, she writes, it can be debilitating to one's professional and personal growth. I still feel stunted in life because of it, especially when not being able to fix my teeth so late in life. Linda's calling from Florida, St. Petersburg, Florida. Linda, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Mary Otto.
Hi. Thank you very much for having this show. I think it's a very important topic. I've been going through some dental problems myself. I'm 67 years old, okay. Almost 68.
Yep.
I'm retired, and I'm having a really difficult time getting care. And the reason is I've been quoted, this is for 6 crowns, basically, 3 of them on a bridge and the other 3 just individual crowns.
6 crowns, okay.
And I've been quoted between $15,000 and $22,000. Oh. I'm not exaggerating. I've been to 5 dentists. And I'm horrified.
Do you have coverage from Medicare that will take care of that, Linda, at your age?
Nothing. No, there is no coverage in Medicare for it. There's a couple of basic things where you get, like, a dental examination and maybe some x-rays, but that's it.
So what are you going to do? Do you have the money? Would you borrow the money? Or do you just pull the teeth and get dentures?
Well, no, I don't want to get dentures. I'm trying to do it one step at a time. So I wait a few months and I get a crown, and then I wait another couple months to get another crown. There really isn't any other way to do it. I mean, unless I want to lose my teeth. And I already had in my mouth probably $15,000 worth of dental work. It isn't like I haven't been taking care of my mouth.
Yeah, Linda, I really appreciate your call. I mean, the story comes through loud and clear there. Mary, describe for us the insurance profile or the range of kinds of coverage that Americans have. Here's Linda. I think she said 67, and it sounds like next to nothing. But lots of Americans, even affluent Americans, have really good dental health coverage.
Yeah, getting dental care like the kind Linda described is a leading cause of medical debt in this country, even for people with insurance. There's no guarantee that your insurance will cover the cost of your dental needs. And many, Medicare has never covered routine dental benefits. So many seniors lack any coverage at all.
And you write fewer than half of the nation's roughly 150,000 working dentists even participate in Medicaid when it comes to that.
Yes. So many poor adults are in very difficult straits getting care. Medicaid's dental benefits for adults are left up to the states because they're not a required part of the program, and they're often among the first things to end up in state budgetary chopping blocks in difficult times, so they tend to disappear right when people need them the most. On sort of a large scale and a small scale, these oral health indicators are real economic indicators, too.
Amanda in Charleston, South Carolina. Amanda, you're on.
Hi, Tom and Mary Otto.
Hi. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on. Hi. I have got $32,000 in the top part of my mouth. I was born with no laterals. It's genetic. So to not have two missing two teeth on my centrals, I had four veneers. That was 23 years ago. I had eight. And then I had a root canal and then another root canal on the same tooth, two crowns on the same tooth. Then they pulled it. I got a $5,000 hole there. And then when I go up to the dental school, because I've already spent $32,000 on my top, I go to the dental school here in Charleston, and they called from upstairs for the prosthodontist, which is never a good word to hear.
Yeah.
And he comes down and he said, your occlusion is off. And Miss Kenny, let me tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to put pepper in my hand, and I'm going to put it under your nose within a year, and you're going to sneeze in every one of your top teeth. That I have $30,000 in is going to come flying out of your mouth. And I was in shock. I was in there to get a crown on a bottom tooth. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, your bone is just disintegrating. Your bone is disintegrating. It's going to, you're going to blow your teeth out of your mouth. And then you can either get dentures or implants. And I said, well, how much do the implants cost? Because I'm not going to get dentures. He goes, the price of a small car. This is, I'm quoting him.
So,
how small of a car? I drive a Prius. And he said, a little more than that, $35,000 when this is all said and done.
So what are you going to do, Amanda? How do you intend to grapple with this?
I told him when my mother dies, she's in skilled nursing. When she dies and she has some money, I said, I'll have to wait. Hopefully I don't sniff pepper between now and when my mother dies. She's on hospice. Because I can't do a thing about it, and I'm a professional. I have a degree from the top school in South Carolina,
yep.
A business degree. And I said, what in the world? We're talking $75,000 in the top of my mouth. And this is ridiculous. And I've had, like I said, two root canals on the same tooth, two crowns extracted, and they charged me to extract that.
Amanda, we've got it. I mean, Mary, what is it here? The waiting on an inheritance to get dental work done. Are these reasonable prices that are being charged? Do we have some big gouge going on here? What's happening?
I think part of this whole separation, I mean, we don't talk about hip replacements in the same way. We have a different
because they're covered by and large by health insurance if you're lucky enough to have it.
Yes, that's right. The gap between dental care and the rest of health coverage is a significant barrier for people like this caller, who are just faced with these huge costs that they are not covered in any other way. Dental benefits have always been kind of considered a separate fringe benefit.
How did we end up with that? Why do we end up with two systems here? Your main health insurance and then dental as an auxiliary or add-on. Why did that happen?
It evolved in a very interesting way. And after World War II, when employers were beginning to talk seriously about adding health care benefits to workers' benefit packages, didn't include dental care. But the idea for it came from a group of longshoremen in California led by Harry Bridges, the famous union leader. They wanted to get dental benefits for their children, and they approached a dentist named Max Shane, who was actually a dentist who was called before the House Un-American Activities Committee for suspected Communist Party activities. He was let go by the committee, but he resurfaced as someone who worked with the union to set up not only a dental benefit program, the first in the world, in the country, and he's remembered as the father of dental insurance. He set up a salaried group practice to provide care on a capitated basis to these children of these longshoremen, and it was the first dental benefit program, and very, very progressive kind of program.
Why is that so the exception? Why did it never get incorporated into broader health? I mean, we hear now that heart health and dental health are very much related. These are serious issues. Why did it never end up in the package? Did dentists want it covered, or was someone lobbying against it?
The organized dentistry was very upset by Dr. Shane and his program. They saw these group practices as kind of like closed panels that were going to take business away from them and their private practices. They have organized dentistry at critical moments in history, has opposed efforts by government and state and federal governments to nationalize care, to broaden care. They organized dentistry's fiercely defended the private practice system and control over the marketplace for dental services. It's been a recurring theme.
Because their profit margin is at stake.
Yeah, the marketplace for their services. That's right.
Janice in Boston. Janice, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to say that I just finished Mary Otto's book, and I loved it. I'm a dentist at a safety net clinic here in Boston,
okay.
And I couldn't agree more with what she covered.
What about it, Janice? What's she pointing out that resonates with you as a dentist?
I think that there is so much around access to care and affordable care. I'm so happy she's bringing this into the public light. This has been a problem in dental care for a long time coming. So I want to thank her so much.
Janice, you're out there doing the work, and in a safety net health clinic, what kinds of circumstances do you see show up there?
I see a lot of people who didn't get preventative care. A lot of my patients come from other countries who just immigrated here. They didn't receive the preventative care that they probably should have. There's just so much work to be done, and it's overwhelming.
I mean, I'm reading Mary Otto, you know, you get the picture that right here in this country, there's plenty of problems. I appreciate your call, Janice. Shirlene writes to us, as a single parent of three children, I could not afford dental care for myself. Last year at age 59, I, the American, flew to Costa Rica with a mouthful of horrible teeth and had extensive dental work done for one-third the price in the U.S. Eileen in Nashville. Eileen, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm also a dentist. I'm also a public health dentist, and I live in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that the dental care for about most of the rural population is worse than I see when I go to Haiti.
Worse in the United States than in Haiti. Why? Do we have a poorer diet? Our teeth are in rougher shape or something else?
Well, yes. There are habits, smoking, our diet, if there's no fluoride. But also our Medicaid does, in from state to state, changes is different. And in Tennessee, the Medicaid pays for no dental services, so they get no services to have extractions. And I go on weekend missions in Tennessee where we have 400 or 500 people who stay up two nights in a row to be seen for free so that volunteer dentists can do extractions and do free dental care.
And that's not, I mean, that's mainly extractions, not sort of the pre-work that would avoid the extraction in the first place.
Right. Now children are included in Medicaid, finally, in the last 2 years, so they can get some dental care, some fluoride and some preventive measures. But anyone over the age of 21, it's just so much worse than Haiti. The teeth, when I see patients in Haiti, I see maybe a couple teeth that need to come out. And these patients in rural Tennessee, they all need full extractions and dentures.
Full extractions. That means like no teeth in the mouth, straight to dentures and good luck to you.
Right.
Good Lord, worse than Haiti in the United States. Eileen, thank you for your call. One more right here. Andre in Brunswick, Maine. Andre, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling kind of to echo what previous callers have said. I just retired as the clinical director of a free medical clinic, and a couple of years ago we decided to incorporate dental into our medical clinic so that we have everything under one roof.
Great.
We have 14 volunteer dentists, and they were so anxious to have more collaboration with medical providers. In our state, Medicare and Medicaid, neither one cover adults, so Medicare, for example, an insurance program for elderly, doesn't cover dentures. But we also see people in their late 20s and early 30s needing full mouth extractions because they have not had dental care in at least a decade. But I think that there needs to be more of an understanding that medical and dental go hand in hand and that dental clinics belong in medical clinics.
When you see somebody in their 20s who needs full extraction, Are you thinking, well, that's because they haven't taken care of themselves, or because, you know, flossed, brushed, eaten wrong, I don't know what, or because they haven't had care?
Mostly because they haven't had care. Obviously, you know, health habits, dental care habits come into it. But I think that if people had regular preventive care and dental instruction, you know, dental care instruction on how to floss, that's what we're able to provide now. And the nice thing is we no longer only do just extractions. We can actually, we have volunteer dental hygienists, and we can complete a dental plan of care, start to finish, and get them back on sort of a routine of regular preventive dental care. And our dentists are just thrilled to not just be pulling teeth left and right.
Good Lord. I'm glad to hear that. Andre in Brunswick, Maine, great to hear from you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the truth about our teeth, the giant disparities in American dental health and health coverage, and the ways in which that seemingly little thing drives destinies for many people. Mary Otto is my guest, former Washington Post reporter who's out with the book now, Teeth, the Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. Dentists, what do you say for yourselves, for our system? Why so cosmetically oriented? We'll look at that. Why so expensive? Why so unavailable to so many? I mean, teeth, we know they're a big deal. And we know in art and prose and poetry, they're celebrated. Go all the way back to the Bible and Solomon. Your hair is like a flock of goats moving down the slopes of Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of ewes that have come up from the washing. All of them bear twins. Not one of them is bereaved. Your cheeks are like the halves of a pomegranate behind your veil. Mary, you've written about the kind of, well, a little more of the poetic side of this, but we should read a little bit from us for us from your book, Teeth, where you remind us everything that's going on when we open that mouth.
Okay. The mouth is a portal, an interface, an erogenous zone. It is our first connection with the world and our last. It is the domain of the breath, the self-expressing lips, the grotto of the tongue, the realm of the teeth that are part animal, part mineral, the teeth inlaid with jade by the ancient Mayans, still fetishized today, the teeth rotting and aching at the dawn of our agriculture, still tormenting today, the teeth that are whitened and straightened, the teeth that are amputated and thrown away, the teeth that endure longer than the bones, that withstand fires, floods, time, the teeth that identify us, scattered in deserts, buried in caves, the teeth keep a record of our lives, locked in their enamel. They identify us, even beyond the grave.
Mary Otto reading from her book, Teeth, the Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. There's a lot going on in there, the grotto of the tongue, no less. Take us to the beauty industry around teeth and how gigantic that has become, how much of our dentistry is now directed toward that Hollywood smile.
Well, I was really surprised as I started to explore cosmetic dentistry that photography and professional dentistry were born at precisely the same moment in history, and they've shared a complex, kind of synergistic relationship ever since. They both built empires upon the smile, you could say. It was in 1840 that the world's first dental college opened in Baltimore, and one of the founders, Chapin Harris, was deeply involved in clinical dentistry, but he was also this great admirer of teeth. He credited them with giving beauty and symmetry to the face. It was also that same year, 1840, that the first U.S. patent was awarded for a camera, and the patent was granted to Alexander Wolcott, who was a dentist. And the photographic negative was invented that year. Photographs, you know, as became part of our culture. They held up this new kind of mirror, and they standardized ideas about beauty. And motion pictures came along later in the century. You know, they kind of helped kindle this popular obsession with the smile. And in Depression-era Hollywood, it's a little bit ironic, but that's when the Hollywood smile was born. a dentist named Charles Pincus, you know, went to the movies along with millions of other Americans. People were just looking for a little bit of escape from the difficulties of daily life. And he looked up at these new movie stars on the screen, and they didn't have what we would consider Hollywood smiles today. A lot of them had lived kind of difficult lives leading up to their stardom, and they had imperfect teeth. And he invented these little snap-on appliances. He called them Hollywood veneers. And the stars flocked to him to get perfect smiles. Even Shirley Temple, you know, who was a little girl, 6 years old when she became a star. She was losing her baby teeth. She wore these veneers, too. Nobody saw her lose her baby teeth. The modern cosmetic dental boom, the one we know today, kind of came up in the 1980s. With the invention of all kinds of sophisticated new bonding and veneer materials, and part of the larger cosmetic surgery boom, in a way, you know, the self improvement and kind of perfectionism that gave us tummy tucks and breast implants and all these other things, plus the medical credit cards that came along in the 90s helped people pay for some of these elective procedures, you know, without having the cash on hand to pay for them. So, you know, just like in the old days, photography and dentistry go together. Brides pay thousands of dollars to get a perfect smile for their wedding photos, and it's just one of the things people do.
So we've got people who can barely get basic care for their teeth, but you describe how much of our dentistry talent in this country goes to this pretty optional, but nevertheless very big industry in cosmetic dentistry. I mean, how much of our dentists' time and talent goes to that side of the ledger now, being super white and super pretty?
It's really hard to get a handle on that exact number. Over the years, people have said that 80% of dentists do provide at least some cosmetic procedures, you know, and some of these procedures are very, you know, they're not that complicated, like teeth whitening, but others involve full smile makeovers with implants and bonding and veneers, so that cost many, many thousands of dollars. It's hard to say exactly how much of our dental workforce time is devoted to those procedures. Cosmetic dentistry isn't recognized as a specific specialty by the American Dental Association, which collects a lot of data on the dental industry. It's interesting to think about how cosmetic procedures kind of change a doctor-patient relationship into a different kind of dynamic, though. It's a more of a customer-oriented as opposed to a patient-oriented interaction. That raises some interesting questions.
All about aesthetics and not necessarily basic health, while other millions of Americans struggle just to keep teeth in their head, struggle to keep their overall health as a consequence, struggle to keep jobs and social standing. But the cosmetic part is right out front. Here's an ad for a cosmetic dental practice in Houston, Texas. Makes the case for the value of veneers, you know, that material put over the tooth to improve the appearance. And you can hear way in the realm of aesthetics here.
When you put veneers on all the front teeth, you can completely redo the way your smile looks. There's a fine line between science and art when you do a set of dental veneers in determining what is the right length for the teeth, what is a good color that not only would look white, but will also look natural and will fit with the color of your skin, the color of your gums.
We do that. We do tons of that. There's Dr. Xavier Saab in Houston, Texas. But what about the fundamentals? Beth in Charlotte, North Carolina. Beth, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm actually a physician, and I'm highly offended by our profession, as long as the dentists in this country, that have decided that dental care, along with ophthalmologic care and psychiatric care, is not worthwhile. If you or I broke a limb, if we had a femur fracture, you would go to the ER and it would be covered. But if you have trouble with your teeth, there is no coverage. Your teeth are an integral part of your overall health. We know that now in medicine and in dentistry. And it's just a disgrace that we're even having this discussion.
And yet you must have seen in your work just how prevalent the consequences of this policy or lack of policy are, Beth.
They are. And why, I know your author there is giving valid points. Where are the dentists? Where are the doctors on your panel?
Well, we're going to turn to one in one moment. In fact, I'll do it right now. Beth, thank you for calling. I want to go to Dr. Lena Nguyen. She is health commissioner for the city of Baltimore, herself an emergency physician. Now, Maryland, of course, the home of Baltimore, is a state which has made significant changes to their dental coverage for children under Medicaid. Dr. Nguyen, Lena Nguyen, welcome back to On Point. You've been listening to some of this. Why do we have these huge disparities in dental health coverage in this country? And what have you learned in your work in Baltimore and what you see in Maryland about how we might get things straightened out, a little more fairness and a little wider coverage for Americans?
Thank you, Tom. And I agree with all the points that Mary has been making, that even though we know based on science that dental care is a serious health issue, we treat it like a cosmetic issue and one of personal responsibility. We separate the mouth from the body in the same way that we separate the mind from the body, and we just don't address it. And actually, everything that we're seeing with the problems with dental care, it illustrates what happens when we treat healthcare as a commodity and as a choice. And then in the ER, it's very common for patients to come in who have dental pain. And I know they have tooth decay. Maybe they need a tooth extraction. In the ER, I can give antibiotics and pain medications and then refer them to a dentist. But I also know that so many of these patients will return back to me in a week or 2 weeks because they just cannot get an appointment. Then they end up having headaches, bad breath. They may even get abscesses that cut off their breathing. They can get all over blood infections, even heart infections that can lead to death. And the perverse thing is that when our patients become that sick, we can treat them. We can give them antibiotics.
That is perverse.
Them, yeah. Right? But what could we have done to prevent these small problems from festering and becoming major costly conditions?
So what's the way out of this? Have you figured it out in Maryland, in Baltimore? What's the way out?
Well, we've done some things well in Maryland, including preventive programs like community fluoridation and having dental sealant programs in schools. And we have increased coverage for children, but we still face many of the same problems as are faced around the country. So even though we have increased the Medicaid reimbursement rate here in Maryland, only a third of our dentists accept Medicaid. And so 4 out of 10 of our kids who are enrolled in Medicaid in Maryland still do not receive dental care. And we have a huge issue with adult dental care as well. In adult dental care in Maryland or anywhere else, it's not part of the essential health benefits. And Maryland is one in 17 states that does not have an adult Medicaid dental benefit. So we need to work to have dental care as part of essential health benefits. There should be coverage and parity, the same way that we would cover physical health. And we also have to work to bring care to where people are, like schools, daycare, nursing homes. We need to incorporate dental care into primary care and also focus on preventive efforts like smoking cessation and reducing sugary drinks, because all of those things also impact our teeth, which then impact our physical health.
People writing in on Twitter here, common theme. Steve says many people travel to Central or South America for dental work. This is Americans. Even with airfare, Steve writes, it costs less than getting it treated in the U.S. Sad, exclamation mark, the Trump style sad there. And Sonia writes, it made more financial sense for my father to travel to Argentina for his implants than for him to have them done in the U.S. It's kind of crazy. Samantha in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Samantha, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call. Love the program.
Thank you.
So my boyfriend is a dentist. We live in a, I would call it a rural-ish area, and there's not a ton of dentists here in this area, so his business is good, but he doesn't take Medicaid. And
why not?
There are so many people, well, he can't afford to.
Meaning it doesn't pay him enough for his time, he thinks?
Yes, exactly. The reimbursement is so low, and there are so many people in our area that use it that if he started accepting it, he's afraid that he would no longer make a living, or at least it would severely impact his bottom line.
Yeah.
And obviously he's in the business of care, but you know, he also has to make a living.
Yeah.
I'm sure that it's obviously a very complicated issue as to how we would get to this point. But I guess my question is for Mary Otto, how did this happen? How do we get to a point wherein a dental professional is reimbursed enough for these services that, as it's been discussed throughout the program, are so important to overall health? I mean, where do we go from here? What are the first steps in trying to at least get medical or dental professionals reimbursed?
Let me put that to both my guests, Samantha, and I thank you very much for your call. Dr. Wynn, let me put it first to you. How do we get there?
Well, it's very true that we have to reform Medicaid. The Medicaid reimbursement rate is much less than commercial reimbursement, and so we find that many of our providers don't accept it. And also, there are other barriers for Medicaid as well, including long waiting periods, a lot of paperwork. I mean, all of those things can be fixed.
Did Obamacare help with that, the Affordable Care Act, or do you know how the Republican revisions going on right now might affect that? Any impact?
Well, under the ACA, private insurance does include dental care for children as part of the essential health benefits. It does not include adults, but it does include children. And any threatened repeal, I mean, the talk about repeal is that they'll take away the idea of essential health benefits. So that would only hurt it more, which would really worsen not only the issues of access, but also disparities.
Marietta, what road would you put us on to Samantha's question to get less disparity?
Really great questions. In some sense, you know, the private practice system that dispenses most of the dental care in this country and public health objectives to spread care in a cost-efficient way across the entire population reflect two different worlds and two different approaches. Some interesting and controversial work is going on right now with mid-level dental providers. They're technically trained providers. They take a couple years to train.
I mean, not dentists, but like dental assistants or something who could get in there and do some work.
Dental therapists, they work as part of dentist-headed teams, and they can work to the lower Medicaid reimbursement rates. You know,
because they don't have a debt from dentistry school.
Yeah, they cost half as much to train. Very controversial, but they're being looked at in a number of states. They're working in Minnesota, in Alaskan tribal areas. Fights are going on in a number of state houses about allowing these workers to come on board and help just extend care, get more hands on deck in terms of getting preventive and restorative care to people who need it.
I mean, if barbers used to do this work a century and more ago, maybe we could consider some more widespread array of talent being brought to it now. Marietta, we just scratched the surface, but it's pretty terrific to hear it. Scary at the same time. I want to thank Dr. Lena Wynn, Baltimore Health Commissioner, for joining us today. Dr. Wynn, thanks as always for jumping in for a minute here.
Thank you.
And Mary Otto, author of Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. Mary, thank you very much for all your research and bringing it to us today. Fascinating, disturbing. You make us focus on our teeth. Thanks a lot, Mary.
So grateful to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.